Sean. Hey, Radcast is on.
And welcome to the show, Mr. Jim Zumbo.
Gentlemen, I am pleased to be here, and I use that term loosely when I say gentlemen.
Al Winder. Just want to welcome you to the show. Thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule to hang out with us on a podcast for a little bit.
Hey, I'm looking forward to it. There's nothing makes me happier than a cold in Minnesota. If I can't be out fishing, I should be talking about fishing.
Hailing from Wisconsin, Jana Waller.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's Radcast. Hunting, fishing, and everything in between. Powered by Bow Spider.
Brought to you by PK Lures and High Mountain Seasonings.
And now, here's your hosts, Patrick Edwards and David Merrill.
Here we are. We are at the Western Hunt Expo in Salt Lake. Radcast is on the road. I snagged Jeff from VPA, and we have Denise from VPA.
Alex. Sorry. I left my badge in the hotel room, so I had to switch with somebody.
She's foot-legged in this morning. If you guys don't know, I call them Very Pointy Archery. They are a pretty cool little offshoot of a machine shop. We've had Ryan on. Mm-hmm. So if you guys want to go back and maybe get a little history, you can go back and listen to that episode and listen to what Ryan had to say about the company. I enjoyed having him on. I met Ryan at TAC, right, and we got to talking about my Cape Buffalo hunt and the broadhead that failed me, and I will be very nice to that company and not mention it. Sorry, guys, you'll just have to go do your own testing. What I will tell you is if you need a Cape Buffalo broadhead, VPA has several choices that I would highly recommend. Why don't you guys give me a little backstory into the company, because I know you guys do a lot more than the archery, but that's your passions. Yep. How did you guys get here today?
So the company's been around for 20 plus years as a machine shop called Absolute Machining LLC. And then in about 2008, one of the people that was main involved, Jeff Miller, he's a traditional bow hunter, come up with a broadhead that he liked. And it's just expanded from there. Ryan, myself, and another partner bought it in 2018 and bought it as a machine shop with an offshoot of broadheads. And really now it's a pretty good broadhead company that we white label a lot of brand name broadheads that people don't even know are associated with us. But if you think of most of the U.S. made good one piece broadheads, they probably come through our shop. Mm-hmm. So it's just grown, and every year since we bought it, we've at least doubled. In the last 4 years, we've at least quadrupled. And this year, it's off the charts. We're only into the second month, but same thing that you've been doing. We've been to all these shows and dealers and Sports Inc. and some of these places are just helping us grow. Mm-hmm. And it's just good. We look at business a little bit different. We have 30 families, not 30 employees. We base what we do at our company based off how we take care of those employees. Some of the things we do is we're trying to go out to high schools and recruit these kids in that don't want to go to college, don't want that expense, or can't afford or can't get into a college, teach them a trade, because that's what this country was built on, was trades. Bring them in, they work for us, we get them out, and after a year, once they get through after a year, if they want to go somewhere else, they can, but most people stay and work. It's a family business, but we're not all family. Blood family. We're all family, but not blood families.
Yep. Keeps us busy, and we all wear a lot of hats, and seems like we're on the road more than we're at home, but it's been fun to meet a lot of people like you guys, and it's a fun industry to be in.
So I imagine that some of the machine shop pays the bills so that you can, because it's not cheap to start a booth, start a company, packaging, branding, logos, websites. And you guys came into what I would say is a pretty crowded space, right?
Definitely.
Now, you obviously have some really cool, unique design and take and features, and there's a reason why you guys are gobbling market share like you are, taking retail space and turning heads, because, frankly, a lot of these broadhead companies are outsourcing overseas. They're inferior metals that just don't withstand to the condition some of us are putting these broadheads through, right?
Yeah, I think what we want you to think about with VPA is that, one, we're American made, right? And that's big to us because it creates American jobs, and it puts people to work, and it supports your neighbors. And hunting is about that. There's no better country to represent hunting than America. It's just part of our livelihood, and then trades go with that. But when you think of VPA, we want people to think you're getting your money's worth. When you buy, we're not the cheapest, but we're not the most expensive. We like to consider ourselves the blue collar people's broadheads. When you go bust your butt for 40 hours a week and you spend money, we want you to feel like you've got a good product. So we've got, we were at ATA a couple of years ago, and a guy that was in his 70s came over and handed down broadheads he bought in 08 when we first got into broadheads to his grandson, mm-hmm. and talked about how he'd killed animals with those broadheads. His son had killed animals with those broadheads. Now he's passing to the third generation. Our competitors, and I'll call them out, but Rage and those guys, you don't hear that. They're a one and done. They're not built to go over and over. We have one of our guys that hunts for us killed 7 animals with one broadhead this year. You don't hear that with a lot of broadheads. We think we bring an extra value. And when you call the shop, you talk to me or Alex or Ryan, you don't talk to somebody that doesn't know anything. So mm-hmm. customer service, quality built stuff made in the USA.
Yeah, the product really speaks for itself with quality, right? Once people try it, they're hooked. There's not really a reason to leave. If they come back, it's because they lost their broadheads or they just want to tinker around and try a different weight or different style or something like that. So yeah, definitely the quality speaks for itself. And then also our company values, like being ethical hunters, ethical in our business practices and customer service, like Jeff said.
And that is, speaking as a business owner on the other side of the table, that is the cool part of being in this space, right? I could very easily transition into a cell phone storage device system. I have no passion for that.
Right.
And that's just about turning a dollar. And there's things I get to do here in this space and people I get to meet and share those photos, share those stories, come and say, hey, look, here's the broadhead that I used on 7 animals. I've resharpened it and I'm going to go after my 8th one, right? Those stories, those interactions, what a cool industry to be part of, for sure.
You brought up TAC, and that's where we met you guys at, was TAC. But what I love about TAC is you show up and you got grandfathers and grandmas and sons and daughters and grandkids all in a group out hunting, and you can walk up to anybody. You don't know them, but you walk up to anybody and you've got something in common. You can have a long conversation. They've got good family values. I mean, it gives me hope that, you know, in today's craziness with the world, this industry, these people, the people that we interact with, man, there's some good people in America, and this is such a great place to live, and we're blessed to be here, and that's what's unique about it. That's what gets me up in the morning, is just meeting great people.
I remember hearing a story about Romans sacking a town, and the people were fleeing, and they fleed to the next village, and they walk up to the old man at the gate, and they ask him, what kind of people live here? We're looking to relocate. Rome just sacked our town. And the old man leans back in his chair and rocker at the front gate and says, what kind of people lived in the town you came from? And the first group of people says, oh, they were backbiting, conniving, nasty people. And he says, you'll find people like that. So they moved along. Second group of refugees walked up, asked the exact same question. And the old man leaned back, retorted with the same question. And they said, people were mostly helpful, kind, courteous, good people. We had great neighbors. And the old man says, you'll find people like that here too. And so the adage is, you're going to find what you're looking for.
Amen. Mm-hmm.
But
absolutely, yeah.
As I've got into this industry, and like you talk about with TAC, it's really cool to see, as we close our booth Sunday and I go shoot the course. And is it biblical? Yes, it's biblical. But more important than that, the year before I started doing this 2 years ago, I didn't close the booth on Sunday. To give people a picture of what that looks like, I would leave my house Monday or Tuesday to drive to that TAC location, get there Wednesday, Thursday, set up, work Friday, Saturday, Sunday, tear down Sunday, drive home all day Sunday, Monday, get home, fulfill the online orders, restock the booth, and drive to the next one. And there was, every once in a while I had a week off, but it got to the point there was like 6 weeks back to back with 0 moments off to just reflect, to just enjoy nature, to just be at peace with being alive, right? It was mm-hmm. running, cascading from one calamity to the next every day. It was just, oh crap, we got to get gas, oh, we got to get over here, oh, we're an hour late getting to the hotel, oh, we got to run and get this. It was just one thing after another, and that just led into 1 week, which led into the next week. And without that reprieve, without that break, you mentally will break. It's gonna happen. You can only push so hard. So what I decided is, we're just going to close the booth Sunday morning. I sleep in, I get up, I have a nice breakfast. I usually grab some staff or my kid, my family, and we go shoot the course. Mm-hmm. And the cool thing about shooting the course is I get to interact with these families that are out mm-hmm. interacting with their families. And if I'm solo running an event, just me, I'll bounce from group to group. I'll shoot with a few guys for a couple shots and then be like, all right, we'll run into a bigger group, and I want to get back down the mountain in somewhat timely manner. So I'll shoot through tack and just skip a third of the targets, right? If there's a big group, I just go ahead and skip through. I wouldn't recommend that if you're going to if you're going to enjoy the event. No, just stay and shoot the course. But for me, I'm just having a nice Sunday morning walk and shoot my bow. But I've had such great interactions with the public out there on the course, enjoying why I created this company is to be outdoors shooting my bow. And I imagine that's a little bit why I still call you guys Very Pointy Archery. I know it's Vantage Point Archery, but I like Very Pointy Archery. Take me to how running an archery wing of the machine shop, because I'm sure you guys have some big contracts, big other things you do, and we don't got to get into that, but I'm sure when you're doing a sales call with a shop or a customer, or but just there's got to be some more passion on that side of the business, right?
Yeah, I don't know that I'd separate them that way. They are separate companies. So the Vantage Point Archery is its own company. It has its own P&L. It runs that way because that's the only way you can measure success, right? It isn't always about the dollar.
But at the end of the day, we got to have dollars to pay the staff, to pay the light bill, to, you know, do all the things that we do. And then we can do the philanthropy, right? If you're going to donate a bow spider or a pack of broadheads, you got to have strong P&L numbers to be able to support what you're doing, or else you're not going to be around very long.
We have strong P&L numbers, and really, again, that comes back to we have 30 families. If you don't have strong P&L, you're not taking care of your families. So when you look at how we structure it, and like you said, on Sunday, there you can consume your life chasing that dollar. And I'm not saying we don't chase the dollar. We are a for-profit business. But if that's your only goal, things fall off the side that are so important. Ethical kill. So you talked about that water buffalo or Cape buffalo you're looking for. When you pull back and you let a VPA broadhead go, I want you to have the confidence that thing's going to do the trick. That's going to take that animal ethically, because that's one thing I don't think people think about. You watch all these hunting videos and they go out and you can think of all the different kind of broadheads there are or setups, but they go out, they shoot this animal. They know it wasn't an ethical shot. They wait 4 hours. They wait a day. They wait, and they go out with the dogs the next day. We don't want that. That animal, for us, we're giving our time and our effort. That animal is giving its life, right? And we want to make sure it has a humane ending to its life. And I don't think that's what chasing the dollar is not the only thing. Making a product that we can hang our hat on and say we're proud that you picked that up. To Alex's point, our biggest thing is return customer. Customers that come back, or shops that bring people back, or somebody shooting our broadhead that says, hey, I need you to get into our shop. That's what a win is for us.
And I think too, like you mentioned, was going to shows or going to TAC events or whatever it is reignites your passion for why you're doing what you're doing. You talk to people on a daily basis through email or phone call, but getting to talk with customers face to face just reminds you why you grind so hard, why you're getting on the early flight just to be home for 12 hours just to leave again the next day. I think coming to shows, even though it's a lot of work and a lot of time and runs us down a little bit, is what we're here for and reminds us what pushes us through the year. So,
and we showed up to this show. Denise is Alex's mom. She's here with us. My wife's here with us. Our TAC events will be my son and one of his best friends, Kellen. It might be Ryan's son, Wyatt. It might be Ryan, but it's not a group of hired guns that we send out there. It's people that are passionate, love the sport, love our families. I can't talk about enough that the reason that Absolute and VPA are successful, we've got awesome families that work for us, do the grind every day, whether it's running a machine or marketing or whatever it is, they're bought in as much as we are.
That is crucial and key, is to have that culture of unity, mission. We all got to be working together in our individual organizations to further the goal of profitability, right? And you do have to deal with bad days, customer, weather, whatever. But it is awesome standing in this booth here and having somebody walk up and say, I got my deer, I got my bull because of you, because of this. And let me show you the photo and thanks for being on my hunt, right? Obviously, I wasn't there in person, but the product that I hand delivered to them was with them and it did what I told them it would do. And that is cool to get to hear those stories. When you wonder why some of these companies are around, look at the faces behind it. It's not always just a huge mega corporation that's looking to turn a buck. It's sometimes 30 families that have come together to build a brand and team up and make something that, frankly, is quite a great product. I stuck them in cinder blocks getting ready for Cape Buffalo hunting, and they should have stayed on there, right? And it came down to, I think I took four different ones with me to Africa and let the pH dictate, hey, which one you want me to shoot. And ultimately, I will make a different decision. We don't get to go back. And to your point about ethical distance, that is, we've talked about it on the podcast before. That is one thing. It's going to be a different distance for everybody sitting around this table, right? But taking your equipment out and actually testing, tuning, and verifying that you can be lethal at whatever distance that is important, right? And I used to operate under the mental status, I practice 30, 40, 50 pin, but I have a 60 and a 70 pin. If I need to, I'll use it, right? I would say that flip that thinking on its head. Practice with your 70, 80 pin and hunt with your 30 and 40 pin.
I agree with that. 100%.
You'll be much happier. I mean, just your success rate is going to go up. And bow hunting is about getting close and being in that animal's environment and part of nature, right? Mm-hmm. That's the cool thing with bow hunting is, and not to knock the rifle hunters, I took my boy rifle hunting and we filmed it and I have no problem with it. I've talked about this on our films. Laying back at 500 yards, ranging an animal, letting it do its thing, and then finally deciding to harvest it is fine. I'm not going to knock that. But when you can sneak into 50 yards with a stick and string and he's still laying there under the tree and doesn't know you're there, and you've got to hold up for 45 minutes or so to get the terrain or wind or animal to get out of his bed, that, you almost have a personal relationship with that animal at that point, right? You've been standing 50 yards away from him waiting for him to stand so you can harvest him. And you're not guaranteed, right?
I had a doe this year that was so close I could feel her breathing on me. And that's the ultimate. You're in their environment. You've got so close they can't smell you. You've done things right. I'd rather have one of those a year than 10,000-yard shots where they don't even know I'm in the vicinity. But it's an interesting thing. With us, I think there's this idea that we have this big machine shop behind us that lets us just play around the archery. That's not what we are. If you look at our lineup, we have a broadhead for everybody. And you call into us, we don't get hung up in this whole, there's this feud within the industry, probably something I don't like about, if I can make you look bad, I look good. We knock down lightweight, fast, or heavy FOC, and there's this big fight in between. You call us, and the first people say, what should I shoot? And we're like, well, what are you comfortable with? Because to your point, going out and practicing and getting good at whatever your setup is what's most important. It's not, I've seen some of the best archers miss shots, and I've seen some of the, what I would say, the least skilled archers make perfect shots. It's about the day. It's like playing baseball. A good team on a bad day or a bad team on a good day, right? It's the same thing with hunting. Hopefully your good days are more often than your bad, but come to us and we'll set you up with whatever you feel good about. Because at the end of the day, when you're up there and you're drawn back on that animal, it's you and that animal. I'm not in the tree with you saying what you should shoot.
Yeah, and maybe for those who aren't familiar with VPA, we carry 100 grain all the way up to 300 grain, two blade, three blade, single bevel. We've got vented options and solid, so a little bit of everything. And we want to keep that wide variety because we want people to call and have what they're looking for regardless of what it is.
Oh, yeah, and you're going to have guys screwing this onto a 50-pound bow and screwing these onto a 80-pound bow, and one guy's going for water buffalo in Australia and one guy's going for whitetails out of a tree stand in Midwest somewhere where he's going to kill five whitetail doe in this weekend. And a guy that can be able to make that choice and make an informed choice and call you guys up and say, hey, this is what my setup is, what should I, to have that guidance, is we definitely need to have less tearing down and tearing apart, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not the only bow pack support carry system on the market, and I'm not going to claim that I'm better than the other ones. I'm different. Let me tell you how. But I'm not gonna knock those guys' product. This hardworking men and women that have come up with other solutions. And if somebody wants to use that one because it has a feature that benefits them better, more power to you. I would just say, can you quantify, measure, and justify what that benefit is? And if you can, go for it.
Check your ego at the door, right? We don't need those here.
So I'll come out and say it, 147 yards on an archery kill out west is ridiculous. Can it be done? Yes, certainly it can. But there's way too much real life that can happen from A to B. Mm-hmm. You're now into rifle territory. Can it be done? It's been done. But the chance of wounding an animal at that distance...
higher probability.
You're less than a 64th inch up or down on your knock point, on your anchor point, and you're going to be talking feet of deflection, and that's not justified to the animals. I'm not going to sit here and tell anybody what their yardage should be, but you need to be able to justify and practice and be lethal and ethical. For me, I like those 30-yard shots. I'd prefer 20, but if I have to take a 40 or 50, I'll do it, right? But I practice at distances that are indicative to allow that to happen.
We talk about that a lot too, like with our product. Life's going to happen. You're going to have a bad shot. You're going to be nervous. Something's just not going to go right. So we want our product to still succeed even for those times when it's not the perfect conditions and something goes wrong. You weren't on your game that day. So that's another thing that drives us to make quality products.
And when we design ours, two-thirds of the vitals, especially on the African game, is from the ball joint forward. Right, and everybody says you shoot the seam. Well, you're shooting the seam, that's a third. It's a third of the lungs. It's really a small pocket you're aiming at. So our broadheads, what we're trying to get them through is that you can go through those bones. We've got Matt that shoots for us that shot in front of a water hole at 45 yards and went through both ball joints, complete pass through at both ball joints. It went 15 yards. And that's what we're trying to strive for is people say, I want this big 4-6 inch cutting diameter. I want a big blood trail. Ryan always, he cracks me up every time he brings it up. He says, if I can get you to where you can watch that deer or whatever tip over at 30 yards, why do you need a blood trail? Now, we'll give you a blood trail too, but let's have the goal be the animal dies quickly and humanely and ethically 30, 40 yards out, not 2 days out, and you have to track it.
And part of that is the head on the arrow is important, no doubt about it. But the spine of that arrow to your bow is important. The fletchings, do you have an arrow that is inherently accurate and has the right fletchings, right? Because I can take a little 100 grain broadhead and put the wrong fletchings on it, and I can screw up the flight characteristics so bad that, and then is your bow tuned, right? Are you throwing that arrow straight at the animal? Because if you're not, now you're inducing a whole bunch of side deflection, right? So there's a lot of people that sit here and want to say, we can talk all day, all these numbers and all these things about broadheads and cutting and width and diameter and spin and whatever you want to talk about, but it's a whole system, and then you're holding that whole system.
And so, you're a variable. You're the biggest variable in that. If you're not practicing, so when we make our broadheads, our demographic, we want to sell them to everybody, but our demographic isn't the person that goes out Friday night, runs to Walmart, buys some broadheads, picks up their bow Saturday morning, gets in the tree. We want people that are practicing, shooting, understand them, shooting the broadhead, not just a target tip, so that when they go out, they're ready to roll. Mm-hmm.
And so to your point, if somebody's looking at getting into archery, I would say start practicing this year. Go to attack this year. Go to your shop, get your bow paper-tuned, center shot, right? Make sure your arrows are spined to you, right? And then start shopping broadheads. And after maybe a year of practice, then go out hunt. If I really despise seeing people go, oh, I didn't draw my rifle tag this year, so I'm buying a bow to go bow hunt with guys next week, and I've been shooting a bow for 3 days. Ah, it'll be fine. I'm like, no, this is, you're entering a world. It's a lifetime commitment. Mm-hmm. There's a lot to learn, and it's always the second you think you're done learning in this industry and game is when you need to step out, because there hasn't been one time that I haven't been in the woods and that deer or elk haven't taught me some sort of lesson, right? Of how to control the environments, the variables, and be immersed in the nature with the animals, right?
They're definitely smarter than we are, no doubt about it.
Like you said, it's a game to you and me. It's life or death to them. And so we do owe it to them to be as lethal as possible.
I guess the one thing I would like to see change, and it won't be us that changes it, but we'll help change it, is this idea that we've got some great archers in this industry, and they're very smart, and they've been through a lot of things. But I struggle when they get on and they say, don't go out and try anything. Don't develop yourself. Just do exactly what I say. And if you don't do what I say, you're an idiot. Or if you listen to somebody else that's a talking head, you're an idiot. That's what I love about the archery side. It's exactly what you said. Go buy a bow. get it set up, and go get your own experiences. Understand what your own capabilities are, because somebody else, that's exactly what that is. It's their capability. It's their opinion. And everybody has opinions, and some are good and some are bad. But for me, I want the opinion to be, all right, this is when I'm up there at full draw, I'm confident 30, 40 yards, I'm going to make that ethical kill. I don't care what Fred the talking head says. I'm worried what Jeff, the guy shooting the animals.
And that's having confidence in your equipment is 100%. I watched Fred Bear shoot a caribou behind a hill, right? We would call it an unethical shot. He knew he could make the shot. He was shooting a bear bow, no sights, fingers, and those caribou come running in. They go behind a little rise. You can just see antlers. He shoots, caribou come running out behind the rise, and he's made a pinwheel shot, right? And so, you know, when you start talking about sights, I've hunted with 5-pin, 7-pin, 1-pin, 3-pin, 2-pin, right? And there isn't one that's right or wrong, right? To sit here and say, oh, well, you shoot with a 2-blade, you're right, and those 3-blades are bad. No, there's reasons to justify each one. And like you said, it might be 100 grain, it might be up to 300 grain.
Yeah.
But making sure your setup is lethal for you, and you know that you can, when having that confidence, when you pull the string back and you're watching that target and you know that, hey, I can make this shot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my dad on our dull sheep hunt, you can watch on film. We laid on his ram for about 15 minutes and he turns and he goes, I can make the shot. And he had been practicing at his home range, laying his rifle cold bore on the table. First shot at the 500 yard gong, center punching the gong and putting his rifle away and going home. He did that 5 times in a row right before our trip. Went up and put one round downrange at 500 yards, bing, and went home. Now, he'd done a bunch of practice before that, but to be able to cold bore your rifle like that, he's laying there on the ram, and you guys can go watch it on YouTube. It's a 440-yard shot, and it looks unethical from the camera, but there's a huge rock wall behind the sheet. This ram is skylined on this false nodule above us, and he had moved. We were going to go right where he was and poke over and find him. He had moved to where he was looking down into our drainage, and typically you want to get above sheep and shoot down on them. They don't look up. They're always looking down. So he's sitting there watching us. The sun is just rising and it's in his one eye, and we stayed in the shadow of the mountain on the other side. And we were stuck. We couldn't go any further, closer. We laid there and Dad finally said, I can make that shot. I said, if you can make it, shoot him. And he one shot lethal right through the neck, right out behind the shoulder. It was great placement. The ram, you guys watch, tips right over in his bed, doesn't even move. Done. To your point is having that capability and lethality and knowing that when I pull that string back on that bull elk and he's standing at 28 yards and he's quartered away looking at a cow, and just having that, I've made this shot in the yard so many times, it's just 30-yard pin, center, ready, let her fly.
Mm-hmm. And nothing better than to, you know, I've been with guys where you walk up on the animal, it's just suffering, and that breaks my heart, man. That breaks my heart because it was just out feeding. It was just having a regular day, and you didn't have enough. And it doesn't mean that you're not going to miss once in a while, but some of those are choices.
Try to eliminate those variables that could happen to the best of your ability, right?
No, I had an experience like that my very first doe harvest at 15 years old. And, I mean, made a rifle shot at 100 and a half or so. Deer disappeared, figured it was dead. Walked up there 5 minutes later, and it wasn't, and had to continue to dispatch it solo on my own. And that was I guess when you take a life at a couple hundred yards through a optic, and you walk up and it's now a carcass, there's some detachment there, right? There just is. When you have to do that in person right there, it's a little more intense and personal. And definitely I would much rather be on the side of ethical, humane. I killed an antelope with my son videoing. An antelope was at 18 yards. I took a frontal shot. It lived for 9 seconds. It went like 3 yards, turned around, and was done. How more humane? Because this last winter in Wyoming, we had 80 and 90% die-off on deer and antelope herds. And when we're talking die-off, it wasn't just, oh, they went to sleep one night and didn't wake up. No, they laid on the side of the road for 30, 60, 90 days and starved to death. And they just, why did they come to the road? Because that's where the wind and sun had blown open kind of the south side of the little bit of road there, and they were trying to eat whatever dirt was there. And Mother Nature's not gonna be kind, right? We interrupt this podcast for the national anthem. Woo! We'll have to just get back on point, but that's why you guys exist, is to give people that confidence that they're gonna make it a lethal, humane, ethical kill. And like I was talking, Mother Nature is not, she's not kind about it. So when anti-hunters, I've dealt with a few of them, they just, I call them non-contributory, right? They're not anti-hunters. They just don't understand how we contribute. And we as an industry slash hunters as a community do need to do a better job of educating our neighbors, our youth, into what it is and why this is important, right? Because we really do lose this in the ballot box, 100%. And so you look at Hollywood, Disney in particular, and the way they paint the sportsman, the conservationist, they turned us into a villain really bad. And we need to fight back against that hard, because that is so infactual. The level of respect I have for game, and when you come to my house, we're having venison for dinner. We're podcasting. I'll pick on you in a minute.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's what we do is selective harvest, right? We're, people say, oh, you go out and mass murder. We're not. We don't shoot a whole herd. Actually, we're doing some great stuff, because you're taking, when you look at trophy hunters, they're taking the mature bull out of the herd, or the mature buck out of the herd that might be aging, might not give room for the younger bucks to get in there and breed. It's actually healthy for the way it works out. And it's not, we are the true conservationists to make sure more money. We went to the Rocky Mountain Mule Foundation, $32 million in habitat that we isolated, that we put in. And I was at a place here in Utah not too long ago, and there was a lady that was complaining about all the elk in her front yard, and she talked about green and how hunters are bad. She built her home in habitat that's been there for hundreds of years for these elk, and she wants them all dispatched now because they're eating her flowers. But she's claiming to be a tree hugger, basically. And I'm standing back saying, no, wait a minute. What I do is I do selective harvest, and what you're doing is greedy. You're putting your house in somebody else's living room and then complaining that they're showing up to eat. I just don't understand the mindset other than control. And we could get into the whole dynamics of the states right now, but just like that, this group, the three of us, stopped as soon as we heard the national anthem, stopped, paused what we're doing, and paid respect, because freedom isn't free. And think about what that means and what's come before us and how we got to where we're at. That's the same thing in hunting. You've got to understand how we got these rights, but we also got to understand, as we sit here and look at your backdrop for this podcast, I see you and your son and your partner and his son or his daughter. And what are we doing to make sure that this lifestyle, this, I don't know, heritage is left for our kids? And that's really what VPA is built on, is we're taking these kids out of high school, trying to give them a choice of what to do if they don't want to go to college, teaching them a trade. That's what this country was built on. It was built on the blue collar, people getting up, sticking their thumb in their nose in the air at what happened in England. Look at the whole revolution and how this country came to be. It's off freedoms and values and morality. And I want to see us continue to do that. And that's part of the cause at VPA. We could make a lot more money. During COVID, we had competitors come to us and say, hey, can you make our ferals? Can you make this? And we're like, yeah, we can do that. We want a 5-year, because we're going to invest in it. They're like, no, just until we can get it back from China. And then this same company, and I'm not going to tell you their name, but they're probably the biggest broadhead company in the world, turns to me and said, Jeff, you need to re-engineer your broadheads so they fail so you can make more money. And to me, I sit back and think, why would I do that? What if that's like selling my soul just for the dollar, right? There's bigger things in this than just chasing that dollar.
Jeff, I've had that same joke of I should make these bow spiders out of paper mache. So when you go out in the woods, it just starts raining, it just disintegrates. And then they come back and go, hey, I need another one. But that's not where I stand as a person, right? I hate nothing more than when I buy a piece of gear, I'm out on an elk hunt 10 miles back in, and it fails me, right? I've purchased this, I've tested it, I've invested in, it's going to be part of my kit to do whatever specific task I need. And then if it doesn't live up to that, it doesn't because that's the ultimate test when you're in the middle of Kodiak or middle of the Brooks Range or on a wilderness DIY elk hunt and it starts snowing and you pull out a piece of gear and you need it to do what it's supposed to do and it fails you, that's an easy guarantee to not be in my pack anymore.
Then when you call, and let's say you get back in and you call and say, I need it fixed, and you've got to call somewhere where they don't speak the same language or they don't care the value. They
or
sold
it. They're going to give you a new one. Oh, yeah, whatever. I don't need 10 new ones. I need it to not
to work. Yeah.
Yep, yeah. And I think all these conversations and the decisions we make as a company all comes back to our faith. And I know we've talked about that with you guys before, but we have to answer to higher up and not just what's going to make us the most money or how can we grow the business so we all can go home each night feeling good about what we're doing and the family, the outdoors, and our faith is what drives us.
What made us meet, right, is when we see a lot of people in this industry and we can have a lot of interactions and there's good people all around. But what got us coming back to talk to you, Dave, was it's made in America. You have value. You have the pictures of your kids here. When we go to TAC events or when we call about bow spider, we talk to you.
Yeah.
When you call about VPA, you talk to me, Ryan, Alex, or Kellen.
I get to see Ryan. I get to harass Ryan and and razz him. And it's not, I feel good about putting VPA broadheads on my bow. I feel good about putting USA-made broadheads. I feel good about supporting these companies who are, because I get hit up every day. Can you sponsor this giveaway? Can you do this? Can you do that? We have one going here shortly, but unfortunately, I can't say yes 100% of the time.
Yep.
I try to as much as I can. You can ask my wife. Her business card is she's the head of the Northern Operations, but N and O are capitalized. She's the head of our no department, right? Because I'm all the time saying, oh, yeah, we can help you out and do that. Yeah, we'll support you. And I'm going to continue to be that way because I can. And it, when somebody comes up and you guys get a phone call, hey, we're doing this charity or this banquet or this event and it's this fundraiser for this cause and we want you to be part of it, it's way easy to say yes and to get behind helping our community be what it is.
Yeah, we do as much as we can. And even, so we did a veteran hunt giveaway last year and we reached out to Bow Spider and you guys donated product for our veteran. And it just was a great experience to be out there with them and learn about what their experiences were and enjoy that common outdoors and love for bow hunting. And then having companies like Bow Spider and VPA and other ones pitch in and support that as well as makes you feel connected as an industry. Like you're all your own company, but you're working towards the same goal.
Yeah.
We've learned to vet those now though too.
Oh yeah.
Because everybody's got their hand out saying, hey, can you do this? So now when an organization comes to us, we say, all right, how much is that is actually going to go to your recipient? Who's going to get it? We don't mind. We'll give it, we'll give 100% to whatever, but it's amazing. Again, it comes to ethics. How many people say, oh, it's a full donation, and you find out when you pull the curtain back that not a lot of it ends up in the hands of the people that really need it.
And so that's shame on you guys out there that are using that for nefarious fronts. But our company partnered with Elk Foundation. We're partnering with Mule Deer Foundation, mostly because when you buy my product, I want to have some habitat for you to go to utilize that product. And in today's day and age in society, if that elk or that deer cannot pay for the acre of land they live on, they're not going to be there. And that sounds callous.
True.
But I guarantee you there is some developer somewhere looking at that acre of ground going, that'll make a great shopping mall. That'll make a great top golf course. That'll make a great parking garage or whatever else, or housing development, or hey, I want to stick my custom 12,000 foot house out there on it. And I'm not thumbing my nose if you live in a 12,000 square foot house. What I'm saying is if you live in that type of house and thumb your nose at conservation hunters, you are part of the problem, hands down. And if you have three of those houses, and if you've worked hard and you feel the need and you've deserved it, great. But if you're sticking those houses in Estes Park, in Montana, in, if you're plowing fresh virgin prairie underneath there to put your little slice of heaven in, and then you're going to complain that the deer are wandering through your yard, you are the problem. And anymore, we are losing habitat in this country very quickly. Here the last COVID kind of seemed to stem that on as people went, hey, I can get out of this hustle and bustle of the big city. And that's why I love Bow Spider, is I get to go marketing with my product, is I got to go out and do some field testing, right? And I got to take some VPA with me and make sure those work too. So that is the beautiful part about it. But I don't want to see trash. I don't want to see, when you get to the end of a logging road, in the Pacific Northwest, 50-50 chance of there being somebody's washer, dryer, and sacks of garbage thrown out there next to their old sofa. And it just, you know, millions of dollars are spent on cleanup of wasteful human. Right? So be a good steward when you guys are out there, and definitely start enjoying the outdoors. Take a kid hunting or fishing. That's what our passion is, continuing this. Why? Because no kid remembers the day they played video games with their dad, right? Every kid remembers their first big game harvest with their dad. Oh, yeah. Their first fishing trip with their dad, right? And I say dad, but the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation put this survey on, and I misquoted it a few times, but they followed hunting families, and this is very interesting. They followed these families, and the data goes like this. If the father hunted, 20% of the youth continue to hunt into adulthood. If the father and mother recreated in the outdoors, that could just be camping 4th of July weekend, that could be fishing your local pond, 80% of the kids continue to recreate in the outdoors into adulthood. For all the husbands and fathers out there, take your wife, take the family, and just get outdoors. Get the tablets out of those kids' hands, get them off the screen, stick a fishing pole or a rifle or a bow. My middle kid right here, he goes to bear camp with his grandpa every year, and they make walking sticks and build fires and whittle, and he's got a little toy suction cup bow, and he is more excited every year about going to bear camp for 3 or 4 nights. And it's a wall tent camp in the woods that they have a bear barrel. He doesn't go sit over the bear barrel. He's just there hanging out. But those memories are gonna be forever in that young man of these adventures. And that's ultimately what Bow Spider's about, is helping however we can facilitate that. And I know you guys are too.
That's the trophy, right? This year, my dad's almost 80. We went out to Utah to hunt elk, and we're out there hunting elk, and it's my dad, my son, and myself. And the trophy is a picture of me. It's my dad, me in the middle, and my son. And then my dad kills this big elk, and we're sitting there, and I turn to give him a high five, and I turn around, him and my son are embraced in a hug. Those are the trophies. It's not about the elk, you know. So it's...
The elk facilitated the memory.
Yeah, the elk facilitated the memory, for sure. That's the way to make things happen.
Well, guys, I enjoyed the time, and on that note, I think that's a great one to end it. How can guys get a hold of you and Ryan, and where can they go to get more info about VPA?
VPArchery.com, Google VPA or Vantage Point Archery. We're on all the social media. Give us a call. We're happy to talk you through your setup or answer any questions you guys have. And yeah, we appreciate it. American made. Like we said, we support families. We're machine shops. So if you have a idea or a product you make and want it made here in the States, reach out to us. We'd love to help you.
Perfect, guys. Thank you, and continue making those memories.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
Thanks again for listening to the Radcast Outdoors Podcast. We hope that you've enjoyed the show. If so, please go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Carbon TV, YouTube, or wherever you're listening to this podcast and subscribe, share, and give us a 5-star rating, which helps other people find the show. You can find all of our shows, recipes, giveaways, videos, and much more at radcastoutdoors.com. Please don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Instagram. We also have a Radcast community on Facebook called Radcast Nation. We'd love for you to join in the conversation there. And of course, please help support our sponsors who make this show possible. Thanks again to PK Lures, Bow Spider, and High Mountain Seasonings. Until next time, get out there and enjoy the outdoors.